In this episode, Philip Zadar delves into the hidden dangers of operational risk and how companies can identify and address these risks head-on, navigating the fine line of recognizing potential issues without victimizing individuals. I'm your host, Anthony Pearl, and this is Level Up Transformation. Philip, I know you've talked to this idea of risk to the individual, but let's talk about operational risk when it comes to superhero syndrome. And I do love that terminology. How is that something that needs to be addressed by organizations at the beginning? And what do they need to do?
Well, the first thing, it's not to victimize anybody, not to put the pointer finger and blame that person and say, hey, you're a big risk for our organization, because that's definitely not what we want to do here. It's more along the lines of actually identifying and accepting that we have that risk. A lot of organizations don't see that. You know, the whole see no evil, hear no evil kind of comes into it. And it's about saying, okay, what can we do? You know, I've gone up to people who I believe have that syndrome, and I said to them, okay, if I was your boss, what can I do to help you? And they would say, okay, well, if you take me off development tasks and you were to put me just in a leadership position where I oversee XY people and I can share the load and still share some knowledge, that would work. And you just speak to them. Things like this. It's about, so if you were to take it back to what's the process, it would be identifying and accepting that that problem exists in your organization, trying to work with that person or people to figure out how can we mitigate it and how can we help them be comfortable enough to actually take that load off their shoulders. And in some cases, you can't do that because it's usually like, you know, in a startup with a founder, where I've seen it all the time, where a few founders burn themselves out because everything is on them, you know. But when they go to investment, the investors are like, oh, hang on, if everything's on you and we're going to invest all this money, that's a risk to us. So how are you going to transfer your knowledge over? So it's about having those pathways as well. If we can't do it now, how do we get there? And what does that look like? Does that look like we have 3 additional people, 2 additional? Are we taking some stuff off? Things like that. And it can apply in both scenarios.
I imagine technology broadly plays a role in helping minimize that operational risk.
Oh yeah. Simple things like, even if you can't solve that problem then and there, having it in a kind of like a risk register where that's not forgotten and tucked away under the carpet kind of thing is something that you can do. There's a lot of different strategies you can bring in, but it all comes down to just recognition and having that conversation.
Yeah, and that's an important part of all of this when we talk about all of these things in relation to where people are in terms of holding all of that information in a project sense or in a business sense overall, is the ability to communicate. And often, if I'm being very generalistic, communication and people who are entrenched in technology that often do work in silos, particularly if they're into that programming side of things, they're not two things that are necessarily go hand in hand. So you actually have to come up with something that's going to force that and make sure that happens.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to be a bit strict, unfortunately, in that case. The resilience is one of the things, that the resilience to change, they're resilient to work with people. And just to make them understand that this is what needs to happen. Now, in some cases, and I've seen it happen, where just by coming into an organization and doing a health check and identifying these problems, they felt threatened and they resigned the next day. Well, you know, you can't stop that, unfortunately. Right. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like, is it one of those band-aid moments? You're pulling it off slow or you're pulling it off in one go kind of thing. And there's extremes on both ends. I think I mentioned earlier, you know, you can have people who want to work and want to change, but then as you're saying, you have your silos who are just reluctant to want to do anything else. So it's up to the organization and the leadership to understand what they really want out of it. What's their strategy?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about people, but of course, technology itself also represents a risk, because when you invest in one particular piece, you can't necessarily have that absolute confidence about where that piece is going to be going, how long it's going to last, who may or may not take over it. That's a difficult thing as well, isn't it? With any, you know, business or government organization for that matter, when you invest in technology, that actual bit, as much confidence as you have, has an element of risk to it.
Yeah, any project that you undertake in an organization, and transformation programs always have risks. There is not, I've never met anybody who can say 100% risk proof. This is going to last us 20 years and we're good. It's always going to have that. It's about doing it in a way that is succinct enough that you can actually start piecing pieces together that are the best fit for the solution. Now, technology has evolved a lot since, you know, we're talking 15, 10 years ago. Like every year it's evolving. It's become more microcentric, as in we've all heard the term of microservices, microtransactions, micro this, because it's all about that. It's all about how can we get a piece of technology to do what it's meant to do, but then the stuff that it's not meant to do, we don't have to just cram it in there. We can put something else in place and make it talk to each other. And then as you start to build these micro pieces together, that becomes what's called platform, what's been coined as the term of platform engineering, because that becomes the platform for the organization. And what I found is with platform engineering, and this is what, and it's a relatively new term, is that it's actually solving that problem of having that risk mitigation, but as well having the ability to pivot, having the confidence in your organization, and really underpinning that digital transformation journey.
Yeah, I love that concept of engineering it to make it actually work, because I think it is something where I think often people go into a piece of software, for example, thinking, okay, this is going to solve all of our problems and it's the magic cure, you know, a couple of days and we're right. off it goes. And it's not that, is it? I mean, it almost never is that.
No, I've never seen one to do that. Like, even if it's something like, you know, you get your big ERPs like your Salesforces, your SAPs, things like that. Yeah, they're great piece of tech for what they do. But try to do something out of the norm or the customization, then you've got full-time team just sitting there managing it 24/7, you know, writing custom code to the ends of the earth. So there's nothing that's going to solve that problem. But that's fine. That's okay. It's getting the right tool for the job that you need. Like, you're not going to sit in there and put a screw in with a hammer. Yeah, it might go in, but it's not the right way to do it.
Talk to me about this kind of, you know, when it comes to choosing tech, you know, a piece of technology in whatever form that may take for a particular organization, how much time do you need to spend on not just obvious, the obvious is assessing whether it's going to do the job that you perceive it need to be doing, but it's also about where that piece of tech is positioned in terms of future-proofing, where it's going, what's its track record, who are the people that work there, how much effort should you be making into that area as well as the actual existing technology, what it can do now. And just a reminder that this podcast is made possible by Zedware, software development and consulting solutions to help increase efficiency in your business. For information on how to get in contact with Philip and the Zedware team, go to zedware.au. Of course, look in the show notes for more information and don't forget to subscribe. Now back to the podcast.
So if I was to look back at how we've approached projects in the past, it's how do we break it down into achievable targets? So, you know, if we were to use the analogy of epics and user stories and tasks, you know, the standard Scrum board methodology, it's how can we break it down into its lowest common denominator? And then in terms of what we need to deliver, what's our value proposition to our customers or our staff? And then how do we group them together into subsequent tasks that make sense? You know, sales system sits with the sales, finance system sits with the sales, et cetera. And then from there, looking at, all right, what's the lifetime we're going to give these pieces of software? Are we going to say this thing needs to last us 3 years before we look at it again? If somebody comes in and says, oh, you're going to build something that's going to last you forever, I would seriously check their meds. It's actually putting that timeline, because then once you've done that, you can then start to budget against it. And I'm not talking budget in terms of dollars. I'm talking about time and effort. Yes, that might result in dollars, but you get the point. It's kind of like saying, okay, for this piece of project, we're going to spend 3 months assessing what we can do. But how do you do that? So one method that we use is we look at, people have coined the term MVP before, you know, minimal viable product. We use another term. We use something called MAP, minimal awesome product. So it's effectively an MVP plus in a sense, where it's you're actually giving that end user experience off the go, and it's not guesswork. Yes, and it might take, an extra 20% of time, but the benefit of that is you can actually quickly knock out, okay, this isn't going to work for us, rather than, oh, he's an MVP, but remember, it's an MVP. So these features are going to change over time. No, with MAP, you've got the features there. They might not be as smooth as you think, but they give you that real touch and feel effect. And then from that, it's, you do your little MAPs, your little pilot programs. You see how many you can do. If you budget for three, do you do three? If you can only do one, then you do one. And then from there, you make your decision. With the technology, especially if you're talking down the platform engineering task, you build it in a way where, and everyone's heard the term loosely coupled, if I wanted to get rid of that technology tomorrow, how hard is that going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. If you have that in the back of your mind, that will dictate a lot on how your project is built. I have so many I told you so moments in projects where I've gone in with that mentality and I've been told not to go in with that mentality. But then, I speak to them 18 months later, oh yeah, that tech didn't really work out well. We're actually looking at replacing it now. Okay, what's that going to look like? So it's a 6 month to 12 month decommissioning with another 18 month build. And it's like, well, if you've done it in a way where, what's the minimal path of resistance to get rid of it, then it would be a better outcome.
It's fascinating when you talk about that, because I've been down that path myself, where starting with a piece of technology and it was wonderful bells and whistles, and yes, we can bring all this into it from what you've done in the past. I never considered that the possibility that I would want to exit from it. And of course, 2 years down the track, that's exactly what I needed to do for lots of reasons. And the exit out of it was where getting in was push a button and it just all kind of happens. Getting out of it was an absolute nightmare and took, manual labor, weeks of work to get it done. Was never worth the investment in the technology in the first place. So it's a lesson learned. As much as you go into something with the intent that you want to keep it for a long time, circumstances change for lots of different reasons. And as much as you do your due diligence, you may not know that in 12 months' time, that technology gets bought out by someone else who has a completely different idea for it, or even wants to retire it, and then you're suddenly stuck. These things happen, and they happen on a semi-frequent basis. So it is important to think about exit strategies when it comes to technology, for sure. And I wanted to ask you about something, because I've, in a similar vein, I know when I've been assessing technology in the past, you're looking at customer service, you're looking at reviews and things of what's happened in the past, but also that ability to adapt to change and things that you may want, as opposed to necessarily always going with the biggest brand name, because that can be right for certain organizations, but it could be the wrong decision for a lot of others.
Oh yeah, but there are pros and cons on both sides. Like, you've got the big brand name products, which you can get their proprietary technology, and as you said, they're really great to push a button and you're off to the races. So they're good in the beginning, and that's good for a short-term goal. But then looking at that transition, okay, how do we transition later to something that is more robust and more for what we need? And that becomes the tricky part there. But to kind of give a little bit of secret sauce and a bit of inside information, the one underlying key thing that you need to do in regards to this is standardization. And when I mean standardization, I'm not talking about how the open source or proprietary technology tells you to do something. What's the industry doing in this space? What's the standardization in this space? Because that's going to make it easier for you to transition and reduce that risk.
Yes, absolutely. It's a very important point, and I think one that not enough time or thought is always given into how you adapt certain technology or what you choose to take on board. And I think these are important things for people to go on. And I think then you've also got the other extreme of things, don't you, where you've got those people that are championing the use of new technology, and then you've got those people that are just resisting change at all costs, haven't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're between a rock and a hard place, really.
But how do you deal with that in an organization where, I mean, particularly in your case, you're coming into an organization because they want to introduce technology and to look at what the options are. So when you're met with that kind of person who doesn't want it, what do you do?
Okay, well, to give an example, so I was brought into a government project about 18 months ago, and I sat there with the project director, and we were talking about, you know, the different options, because we'd done a little assessment project for about 3 months. And he said to me something, because I was arguing to and fro different methods of delivery. And he said to me, well, you need to remember as well, you're also a vendor. So we have to take what you tell us as well from that perspective. And that was really interesting, where it's like, how can you come into an organization, that's one of the challenges, and try to tell them, well, I'm trying to help you. I'm not trying to sell to you, because I don't make benefit no matter what technology you choose. I'm just here to help you out. And that becomes your challenge, is trying to find and listen to the stakeholders, listen to their wants, and try to tick the boxes for them. Because when you do that, whether it's technology A, B, C, or D, it could be a blend of all. They appreciate where that's come from. And I think that's the best way to overcome it, because then you have to try and get at least most of the stakeholders. I'm not going to say all, because you're never going to get all. Most of the stakeholders, whether it be at the director level, at the, you know, the superhero level, wherever it may be, to understand the perspective and where you're trying to go, and get them on the same page. And it's no easy task. I've never seen anyone walk into a room and do that in one day. It takes a lot of time. But it's all about communication.
It's definitely a key factor in all of this. And I think it's something that, you know, we've worked through a whole bunch of reasons why this idea of superhero syndrome exists. And when it comes down to it all, communication is the key to underpinning how you move forward with this.
When you're explaining to people, everyone's got different levels of understanding. You have to try to make it so they understand it. Don't make people feel inadequate in a room. Explain it to the point as you're explaining it to a child. You know, help them, take them through the journey with you. That's what I find. It's not like, oh yeah, I'm telling you to use this tech because I think it's great. Okay, why? Explain it to them. Where's this going to benefit them? Where's the future tangible benefit? Where's the intangible benefits? Yeah, you know, we've brought in solutions where the intangibles outweighed the tangibles, and it worked because that's what they wanted, because they didn't know they wanted that. So it just bring them along the journey with you, help them understand at all levels, and bring to your previous point, document as much as you can, because people will forget that meeting that you had 3 weeks ago. You know, have the action items, have the agreements, you know, have the minutes, and then just build that story behind it, and then just at the end of it, put it in a pack that can just say, here we go, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, we've all agreed on it, and this is when we're going to have it done by, and then just go forward from there.
Thanks for listening to the Level Up Transformation podcast. Contact details for Zedware and Philip Zada are included in the show notes. This show has been produced by Podcast Done For You. I'm your host, Anthony Pearl. Don't forget to subscribe and listen in to the next episode.